Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. My next guest wrote a book that became the number one bestseller, which was Sharing the Lives of 30 Ladies Who Are Neurodivergent. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and let's learn more about her.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Mandy Nicholson. Welcome to the show, Mandy.
Hi, it's absolutely amazing to be here.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
So, yes, I'm Mandy Nicholson and I am the creative genius consultant. I'm an artist and an author and a creative retreat owner in Scotland, and I help creative and neurodivergent women to launch, grow, and scale their businesses and make more money. And we have recently just published a book called Beyond the Ordinary.
All right. So, what that you, first of all, are you neurodiverse yourself?
I am autistic. I have a 24-year-old daughter who is autistic and ADHD, and a 20-year-old son who is autistic.
All right. So, when were you diagnosed?
I have never been diagnosed. I've self-diagnosed because I've raised two children and I've watched all of their traits and realized that's why I've always been different and why I've never fit in and why I've ended up doing what I do. I'm 60 now. It seems pointless. I'm 60. I didn't kill anybody and I didn't die, so it seems a bit pointless. Yeah.
Now, were your children diagnosed or they also like you self-diagnosed?
No, they were diagnosed early. This is a journey that I've been on with them. My son was diagnosed at 5. But my daughter only was diagnosed at 21 because she experienced the what usually happens with girls, that it's just anxiety and depression. She actually wrote a chapter in the book and she calls autism a boys' club.
Anyway, when you self-diagnosed yourself, did you feel like a blinders had been removed and things just started to make sense to you?
Yeah, it was actually during COVID. My daughter said to me, "Mum, you are just so autistic," because we were locked down together. And I think when you're in that environment, some of the traits that you kind of just mask through life come to the surface. And it was those conversations that actually led me to saying, "You know what? You're probably right." But it made me see so much more than I'd seen before. And that's what led me to starting observing it in creative women, because there's a huge connection between creativity and neurodiversity.
I mean, tell me about it. You met like many others I've talked with, all have done the same thing. You look at your kids and you realize, wait, all your traits are the same thing I'm going through now. And they're just realizing this, like you in their late 60s or early 50s and so on, that I must be as autistic as you. I mean, as the saying goes, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
It definitely doesn't.
So, what is it like to actually be able to relate to your children because you both share these tr common traits?
I think we have just really good relationships with really good boundaries that we just accept. And there's no questioning, and it just opens the lid on this level of non-judgment of, I know my daughter can phone me from the toilets at work having a meltdown, and I can stay calm because it's what she needs. She needs me to stay calm and just listen and be there. And I think it's that understanding of, I know when I felt like that, I don't want anybody saying, keep calm, you'll be okay. It just opens up that knowledge that it's already there because you've been dealing with it all your life.
You know, I think that's what all of us want in reality is somebody on the other side to say, to understand what we're going through, to keep calm, to understand what's happening, and to talk us down through our meltdowns, through our a craziness. I mean, I have a really good friend who totally understands me. He knows I'm autistic. He thinks he himself might be on the spectrum, even though he was tested and it said he wasn't, but he's got the same traits. He's the type of person that when we're out together or we're on vacation together and it's late at night and I just go off rambling or saying something crazy or just insulting at him, he'll just look at me dead in the eyes and go, "Reed, I know it's not you. You're tired. Let's call it a night." And that's the kind of person we need in our life, either friend
So
or family.
we do need that person, and I've been that person, and I am that person for my children, and then they are for each other, and it's empowering, I think, when you can be yourself. And what's really wonderful is my daughter's found, somebody that she shares her life with, and he understands her and allows her, some of these autistic traits are fantastic. They're brilliant. They're genius. And actually, people judge based on the surface. And under the surface, there's a lot going on, isn't there? There's a lot of brain work going on to cause that meltdown or to cause you to feel the way that you do in the moment.
I mean, it's like people have said, it's an invisible disability in its sense because they don't see the other side. We are not like those who have Downs where you can see that. Autism is a disability that's a mental disorder. It's in the mind. And those who see us only see one side of the story. The family sees both sides and they understand. And it's like I had a guest a long time ago told me her daughter and her son both were ADHD and ASD, and they were out at a camping trip, and I think it was a camping trip or a ball game or something, and somebody said something to her daughter, saying like, "You don't act like you're on the spectrum or anything." And the brother came up to the sister and says, "Hey, listen, they don't understand you as much as I do and mom does. They don't see the other side of the story. They don't totally understand you as a person as we do as your family." And that kind of made her feel better.
As long as there's somebody, I mean, the sad thing is a lot of people don't have people who understand them. And maybe the parents are not coping with the children, or the partners have seen can't cope with the autistic traits. And I'm having to do a lot of fighting at the minute for clients, to with the government departments where there's benefits available for these people, and the people on the end of the phone don't understand the condition. And I literally had a call yesterday. I was talking about one of my clients, and the woman on the phone said, "Well, why does she need this support? If she's a coach, she should be able to do these things." And I was like, I shouted at her, actually. I said, "You don't understand. Yes, she can be a coach and she can be a professional. Doesn't mean that she can deal with the money or with the accounts or with some of the other things that are involved in being that. And she needs support because of her condition. And there's such a misunderstanding of the condition."
I mean, that alone reminds me. I mean, that's one of the big things I am a very big advocate on is the people that work for the government, for in my case, for the state, they don't understand autism to they can sit there and you can talk, can be your caseworker, and they can look you in the face and say, "Oh, you can't do this, this, and that." And then you're just looking at them with this blank stare in your face and thinking, "How dare you tell me what I can and cannot do?" And I've heard many stories of people who've had that happen and turn the story around and saying, "Look, I've accomplished all of this, and you're told." And it's, I mean, in my case, I literally walked out of there with my mother, and my mom just saw this look on my face and she's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "I've never been insulted in my life like that." And my mom's like, "Well, what do you want to do about it?" And I'm like, "I want to talk to her supervisor and let her know that this woman has no idea who I am and what I'm capable of. I want a new caseworker." And my mom, as calm as she was, she's like, If you're going to do this, you got to be tactful about it. You
Yep.
don't want to be insulting because that just brings you down to her level. I
Absolutely.
wrote a letter saying, listen, I've been insulted. I don't care for the fact that she's sitting there telling me what I can and cannot do. She doesn't know what I'm capable of. And I want a new caseworker, and I got one. And even this new one wasn't much help. And in the long run, I wound up getting myself a bachelor's and a master's and traveling through Europe on my own.
We are intelligent people who are very capable of achieving anything. And that's what I've done with my business. I've got two businesses, multi-six-figure businesses. I've just published a book. It's not my first book. I do all of that, but there's still things that I struggle with and need support with.
Yes.
And I have a team that do the things that I can't do. And that's really important. But then I am very lucky that I've had a career that led me to be able to do this. And not everybody has that level of support. And that's why we step into the world and go, do you know what? Do you know who I want to work with? People who are like me, who struggle like me, and I want to make life easier for them.
Yeah, I mean, people don't understand that who we are is not what you see. We are very capable people, but we do have our own struggles. And the city workers, the country workers, government workers don't understand it. All they're there to do is sit there, tell you what you can and cannot do, then what they can give you. And it's, excuse my French, it's bullshit. They need to be trained in how to talk to those of us who are neurodiverse.
Most definitely. And I think there's a huge ripple out in society today about the trans argument of them being accepted and taken seriously. And actually, we can see a lot of the time their struggles and how they want to be accepted, but we remain invisible and have the same sort of issues going on all the time. And it is difficult to be able to communicate with people. This is why I ended up writing the book because, sorry, my dog's barking in the background. Always happens when I'm on a podcast.
Not a problem.
So yeah, that's why the book happened, really, because I wanted to amplify these voices of these misunderstood women.
Well, that brings me to my next question. What prompted you to write the book, and what was it like sharing all these ladies' experiences?
Okay, so what prompted me was I'd kind of been noting down my observations when I realized I was autistic and I was working with creative women and my children. I was noting down the behaviors and observations that I made about these women, what their differences were. And it ended up as a freebie. I created a freebie called The Mind of a Creative and connected it with neurodivergence. And it was my most downloaded freebie. And people would phone me up or message me and go, oh my goodness, it's like you're talking to me. I'm all of these things. I'm all 35 of these things that you've picked out. And I thought, do you know what? There's 35 little paragraphs there. I could write 35 chapters. That could become a book. And that's where it started. I started taking each observation, doing my research, talking to people, and I wrote a chapter for each of those observations. And then I had an idea one morning, what if I put real stories in between those chapters? Wouldn't that be a wonderful book? A self-help guide, but also with real stories from real women. And that's what ended up happening. It then took on momentum and became beyond the ordinary. And since it's been fantastic seeing these women that thought they could never ever tell their stories, find the courage to do so, and then actually do it and bring in the. It's been a bit like herding cats at times because we've got a lot of neurodivergent ladies in there, but it's been a joy. And now seeing them, we got to the number one bestseller slot. Six of them read out their stories at our launch event at Social Impact Live. And now we've just had our first meeting for our own podcast.
Congratulations.
So it's, yeah.
Now, how long did it take you to write the book?
I've been writing it on and off the my chapters for about 2 years, and then I pulled together these stories from these women this year. So it's probably been about 2.5 years in from the first idea to actually ending up as a book.
Now, what was it like reading and adding stories from other women sharing their life with you?
It was very emotional for me to read these stories because there was a definite red thread running through the book as I was reading the chapters of the same experiences coming up again and again. And these, where they, I've had lots of jobs, I've been in abusive relationships, I've been dealing with addiction. There was lots of these traits that I was seeing again and again. I've cried, I've laughed, it's been inspiring. It's been a wonderful project to put together, and I'm very grateful for these ladies.
I know the woman I had interviewed before you who shared her story, an amazing woman was Amy.
Yeah.
And I mean, talking about an amazing story to deal with all her chronic illnesses along with autism and ADHD, realizing she's got autism and ADHD,
Yeah.
and finally can't has to leave her job because of COVID
Yeah.
and needs to find work, and she comes up with not one but two companies to start on her own, and one with her son. I mean, that's an
Yeah.
incredible story all to itself.
See how powerful these women are, that they've come up with solutions. A lot of them have felt unemployable, so that's why they've ended up self-employed, because they've found their own way. Many of them are educated to degree level and above, and these are clever women that have ended up in a system that didn't understand them. But Amy's story, like all of the other stories in the book, are so inspiring.
I mean, I have a really good friend who's a big advocate out there in England who told me we were talking, and I have a friend who's autistic who can't find work. He's like, listen, what you got to do is you got to find something that will bring people to you and something you love and keep doing it until it brings somebody to you and that says, hey, I want you to do this for me. And that's the way it should be for those of us who can't find work is do something you love. Because people know when you're neurodiverse, especially with something like ADHD, is you can't just do something you like because you get tired of it after a while. But once you start doing something you love, you keep doing it because becomes a passion project for you.
Absolutely. And that's what many of the women in the book are. They've got passion projects. They're doing things they love. And then many of them have worked with me, and I kind of keep them under control. You know what that ADHD brain is like? They've got 100 ideas a day, and they want to do another 50 things in their business. And I'm like, no, we pull you in, and we make money from one income stream, and then we add another, and then we have another. So it's about also recognizing, yes, you're a genius. Yes, you can build a business and follow what you want, love, and with passion, but you've also got to have some control in there and a little bit of stability. Otherwise, you'll never make money because you'll always be starting a new project. We're very prone to that.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked with many people who have ADHD and they're like, oh, I've started this, and this. And then they realize they get overwhelmed. And then they're like, now I got to start weeding it down to one or two, because otherwise they just get buried and overwhelmed and it just becomes exhausting.
Absolutely. And that's why I love working with these people, because seeing them have the realizations and being able to make money but still have other projects on the go at the same time, once they learn the skills, they're off and running and building businesses. And I love watching that. And there's a ripple effect to that, because when they go out and build their businesses and doing what they love, they're helping others. And I love watching that ripple effect happen.
Yes. Now, what does it mean to you to be listed as Amazon's number one bestseller?
Oh, it was amazing. I was doing the keynote speech at Social Impact Live. So I was on stage, and somebody in the audience shouted, "You've just hit number one." And it was just one of the moments where the whole audience erupted. And it was a precious moment, actually. And it means a lot to get the book I've got a saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. So do everything well. And I promised these authors that I'd get this book to number one, and I did what I said I was going to do.
Now, do you resonate with some of these stories in your book?
Totally. Yeah, I resonate with so many of them. And my daughter's actually written a chapter, and my sister. So it was interesting actually to read their stories from their perspective. But yes, a lot of them make so much sense to me and mirror some of the things that have happened in my life.
Now, what does your daughter feel about being in your book and actually seeing that her mother is like the number one bestseller in Amazon?
Well, so is she, because she's a co-author. I mean, my daughter's autistic and ADHD, and she's just got a first class honours degree in art and design. She's written a dissertation. I said, Becca, it's 2,000 words. You can write a story. Write your story about how it felt at school for you and how it felt being an autistic girl who, and that's exactly what she did. She struggled writing it, but she said it was really cathartic, and she was able to look at her journey a little bit easier. And she's really proud to be part of the book project with me. That's something that's a legacy, isn't it? Being in the same book as your mum.
I mean, because if you feel if you look at it, it's an escape. It's
Yeah.
so it's a relief to put this out and share your life with the world.
Yeah.
And for your daughter, I know what she's went through. I myself went to, and as I told you earlier, I went to school in England, and it was hard because you gotta, for me, who's autistic with ADHD, like your daughter,
Yeah.
you gotta figure out how to balance the fun time with the
Yeah.
school time,
Yeah.
because you're in this whole new world and you have nobody breathing down your neck. So you really, everything's on you, and I know the pressure. I mean, writing my dissertation for myself was the hardest thing in the world. And
Yeah.
then I don't think I've ever told anyone this. It got shut down.
Oh, really?
When I graduated and my grades got turned in and I got them handed back, I was told by my advisor it wasn't master's material.
Really?
He said, and I was a computer science major,
Right, okay.
but I am a creative person. I'm not one who thinks logically. So for me
Yes.
to understand the programming side of it all was difficult. And he's
Yeah.
like, part of it was your dissertation. Part of it was the fact I did most of the programming help for you. You didn't write anything. I'm like, well, I told you I have trouble with logic and programming. And he's like, still. But I walked away with a postgraduate certificate,
Yeah.
which for somebody like me is an achievement.
It's a huge achievement, and it doesn't matter how it happens, does it? As long as you get the end result.
Yes, I mean, one of the best stories I remember was I'm walking through campus with a good friend of mine, and she turns to me and she goes, "Wait, what's it like to be somebody who's autistic across the ocean, surrounded by people with several different accents, several different countries from all around the world, and taking on an advanced course?" And I just looked at her and I'm like, it's a challenge. But it's something I'm up for.
Yeah,
Then I
I
had
think
another
that's
friend say the same thing, and she's like, "Why did you do this?" Or say, "I'm proud of you for doing something like this because
yeah.
it's a challenge."
And if you can face those challenges and meet them and do your best, I always say to everybody, 80% is good enough, because your 80% is probably better than everybody else's 100%.
I mean, for us, 80% is 100%,
Yeah,
because it's
it
an achievement.
is.
I remember when I first went away to college, before I even went for my master's and my bachelor's, my parents sent me away to a university here and was in another state because they had a program for those of us who were disabled. And we had the meeting, we had this big dinner, luncheon. And you get to sit with former students of the program, And one of them was talking with me, and he goes, "I'm going to tell you a secret." And I'm like, "Okay, what is it?" He's like, "I need you to understand that it will take a normal student an hour to do their work. It will take us 2 to 3." And I just looked at him with my eyes wide open, and I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "Because for a normal student, they can process, read and process at the same time. For us, it'll take just an hour to read it, an hour to process it, and then an hour for our mind to understand what we just processed."
100% right. Totally. And I've got a client like that at the moment that just can't, she needs time. I also had a former client who did her master's in 1/6 time. They supported her through the university and she did her master's in 1/6 time. And she said, you know what? It doesn't matter that it took me longer. I still did it.
I mean, that's the thing in the that's the thing in the in general is we did it. She did it. As long as we get it done, it's done. Mom.
Unfortunately, a lot of neurotypical people are very impatient and very much about productivity. But for me, it's about quality, not necessarily quantity. And I think it's worth the wait with most autistic people.
That's what I've said to a lot of my friends about, in the I myself have written a book, and it's one of the most important messages that I believe you will believe in, and everyone else that believe in, is you need to step out of your comfort zone. Otherwise, the world's only going to keep moving, and you're going to look back when you're old and gray and said, "I should have, could have, would have." But I talk about the fact that when I was in school, it was tough. And I have people who say, my mom has said, if you feel you're struggling, come home. It's not, nothing's written in stone. But in my mind, I've said to myself many, many times when I was there, if I go home, I'm a failure. And that's something I'm not. And I have friends who said, "Why have you done this? Why did you do this? You're not using it to this day." And I keep thinking, "Why did I do it? And why don't I remember all this?" And I'm like, "My ADHD."
That is in, I think as well for myself, what made sense to me is I spent my life trying to prove to people how clever I was by collecting certifications and qualifications. Because that said, look at me, I've actually, I've got 2 degrees, an advanced diploma, and 7 coaching qualifications, more than the average coach. Why? Because I hold myself to a high standard. But I also, this is what made sense to me during COVID when I realized I was autistic. I needed to prove to myself that I was good as everybody else.
I mean, that's so true. I mean, people don't realize we are as only as good as we put ourselves up to be. I have a really good friend who I met who's autistic, and he keeps trying to prove to himself that he's better than everyone else and this and that. I'm like, listen, it's not self-gratification that's going to get you through life. It's you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm happy with what I'm at. I'm happy who I am. And I'm like, self-gratification is just going to hurt you. It's going to enable you. It's going to put you down to the point where you're dependent on other people's opinions.
Yes, external opinions, isn't it? But what this is why I think a lot of women now are being diagnosed late. A lot of women have been through that journey of trying to prove that they were as good as everybody else around them, in whatever way they've done that. And the late diagnosis is a relief for most of these women.
I know, and people I ask when they get the diagnosis, like I asked you, was it life changing the minute you got the diagnosis? And they're like, yes, because everything in the past started to make sense. Their idiosyncrasies, their mannerisms, their the way, and then they look at their child and they're like, oh my God, what I'm everything makes sense now. And I'm like, it feels good. And you're like, yes, because my life has purpose now to why I've done what I did in the past.
I mean, it goes through every part of life. I mean, I've had four husbands, and
Wow.
I make light of that and say, you know, that's my ratio for life now. I'm going to fail 75% of time and then be successful 25% because it was number four that was the one that was right. And then he died. So I was like, you know, but it runs through everything in your life, the doing all the qualifications. I've been married four times, which means I'm difficult to live with. And some of these real, but those, all of those things made sense when I realized I was autistic. Of course, I'm difficult to live with. Absolutely, I'm difficult to live with. That's what makes me a genius. That's what makes me special because I don't compromise.
I mean, I hate to say it, your daughter kind of won the lottery in the autistic sense because she found a partner.
Yes.
People don't realize the struggles we go through trying
Yeah.
to find someone that understands us 100%. I
Yeah.
haven't found that person yet. She
That's
found
why
it.
She's there somewhere. Yeah, they are out there somewhere. But it took me four marriages to find that person. And my son is 20 and he hasn't found anyone yet. And it's just, you know, it's the hard part that people don't see around autism, isn't it? That it's difficult to build really honest and true relationships and be accepted.
I think the part of it is they only see one side of the story.
Yes.
There's always two sides to a story, and they only see the one side, the side that either those of us are masking or those of us just don't want to share with the world. And they don't see the struggles on the other side. And that's why when we're out with somebody, with our friends, if we stim, if we say something we shouldn't say, if we do something, and they look at us strange and they don't know why until we say, oh, we're autistic.
Yeah.
And then we got to explain what stimming is and why we're pretending to be something we're not. And then either it's, I don't want anything to do with you because you're too weird, or, oh, I understand and it's okay. So you'll as you grow, you realize there are two types of friends you'll have. And I've written
Yeah.
about this in my book
Yeah.
is you'll have friends that will be with you no matter what, and then you'll have friends who will stick with you, and then when they find out who you are, want to try to change you. And
Yes.
that's the type of friend you want to say, no, I don't want to change for anybody. I am who I am.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been through so much of that. Many friends along the way have dropped off, and my daughter experienced that. It was awful for her in sixth form at school, where as she got older and realized who she was and was really living authentically, people pulled away from her because they found her difficult. And that's hard at that age. It's hard at 18. Now at 60, I don't really care whether people like me or not. I'm happy to be the weirdo in the room and I'll show up and say what I need to say. And if I call it my filter. It filters out the people that don't matter and don't like me, and it keeps the ones that do.
There is a quote by a YouTuber who I quote in my book, and I stick to this quote, and she goes, and she this the quote was reply to how do you handle the haters in the comments? And she's like, the moment she stopped caring about what people thought of her is the moment she started living her life. And I say that to everybody. The moment you stop caring about what people think of you is the moment you can start living your life and being your true self.
You can live fully then because you're not worried about the judgment of others. And that's, you know, it's that's why I try and work with these women to help them get there, because women do care what other people think. Men do as well, but women more so, because we have all those layers from society, don't we? That we've got these stereotypical roles we should be in, the wife and mother and friend and person who says yes to everything and does everything. And then if we're autistic as well, there's so many different layers that it's a lot of pressure on a lot of women. And that's why they're experiencing some of the things that they experience. But the moment, she's right, the moment you don't care what anybody says anymore, it's just such a freeing moment in your life. And you can, that's why I'm here living in Scotland in my mini castle doing creative retreats. I call it my mini castle because I had a castle on my vision board and the universe put this place in front of me and it's a miniature version. And I'm getting to do all the things that were on my vision board. I do creative retreats, I do B&B. I work with creative women, I write books, I paint pictures. My life is just great fun because I get to do all the things I love every single day because I don't care what anybody thinks.
Yeah, I mean, people ask me why I'm such a confrontationalist, and the answer truly is I don't care what people think about me. If I held back all my emotions, all my feelings about what people think of me, what people, why people stare at me funny, I would be a shell of half myself. I have lost many volunteer gigs because the volunteers don't understand me, or I've said something wrong. And I remember one time my supervisor, the first time, goes, tells me, "You're standing too close to the volunteers." They said, "You're standing too close to them." And I'm like, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize it. Why didn't they say anything to my face?" And she's like, "No one wants confrontation." And I'm thinking to myself, I beg your pardon. If you don't tell me to my face that I'm standing too close, then how am I supposed to correct it? And then you wait a few days, then you tell me it's gone by that time. It's like telling a dog they're bad after they did something.
Exactly that.
You tell us to our face we did something wrong. We correct it there and then. That's how we are.
And we won't take offense at that. And I've got an amazing client at the moment who is autistic, and I rely on her to ask all the difficult questions every single coaching call. And I love it because that's what we should be doing, asking the difficult questions, not being afraid to say, what do you mean by that? How does that work? Why does that work? And unfortunately, too many people keep quiet.
I can tell you the amount of times I've been put in Facebook jail because of the stupidity of the people on Facebook. And it's just countless because I have zero tolerance for stupidity in this world. Especially now with our elections, it just gets absolutely nuts. But people need to realize we are the thing. There's a saying, I am, what is it? I am different, not less.
Yes, that.
Which
That's
means,
what my
yeah, we are
opinion.
different, but we're not less of a person than you. We can do
No.
everything you do,
Yeah.
but we think differently.
We connect the dots in a way that neurotypical people cannot. And that is a huge skill. That's what I love tapping into in the neurodiverse community is this ability to see things three-dimensionally and see problems that nobody else and solve them that nobody else can even see. I love that about neurodiverse people.
I think one of our big things is we're able to see the bigger picture. Where the neurotypicals only see the problem ahead, we look at something and we see everything. And we're able to figure things out. That's why if we're hyper-focused on something or it's our special interest, we're able to put things together and work things out better. Because we don't have blinders than where we focus, we see everything we do.
And that, you know, is such an incredible skill to have in business if you can really tap into it. This is where I focus my clients and say, you know, this is a great skill that you have. Let's use it. Let's think big picture. I mean, I do vision boards and mind maps on 4 foot pieces of lining paper. And I teach people to do that because I am able then to get things out of my brain and connect the dots during a mind map and teach it. People are amazed by that process. But for me, it works. I'd rather have a Sharpie in my hand and be drawing on a big bit of paper than typing on an Excel spreadsheet.
I used to do mind mapping as well because I found it freeing because I put down the first idea that comes into my head, and then I start branching off of, okay, why did this come into my head? Ah, this is there. Then why is this there? And this leads to that. And then you realize all of a sudden, everything just starts connecting the dots.
And that's how our brains work. That's why they're different. And yes, we might be the weirdos in the room, but we're the genius weirdos in the room. That if you left us on a desert island, we'd solve all the problems and everybody else would still be struggling. We would have it solved. So I'd rather be around a group of neurodivergents. Thank you.
Yes. I mean, one of the things I talk about is I'd rather stand out than blend in. I had a guest on a while back, and I go, and she's like, I'd rather stand out. I'm different than everybody else. I don't care what people think. I am different. I am who I am. And that's the way I feel. We want to stand out. We're different and we're proud of it.
We are, but I think for a lot of, particularly women, because women want to attract partners and we want to build families as well as doing all the other things, so much masking goes on with girls and women. That's why they're diagnosed a lot later. Boys are able to just be who they are a lot younger than women. Women are trying to fit in, women and girls are trying to fit in, and it holds them back so much in life, in their businesses, in their careers, in their lives, from following their dreams, because their dreams are put aside often just to fit in with what societal expectations are. And that saddens me, which is why we go back then to why I did the book. Let's shout about the weirdos in the room, please, because the weirdos in the room are great and they happen to be women too.
Let's circle back to your book. How did you choose the woman in your book?
Ooh, I mean, it's a good one. I did put a post on Facebook and I said, anybody interested in putting a chapter, thinking I'd get half a dozen people apply, and I got 160 responses. So then I had a job to sort of chat to all of these women and get to know them a little bit. And for me, it was important because the chapters in the book, so if I kind of flick into the book, chapter one is called Your Mind Literally Never Slows Down. So I was looking for somebody who had that mind to go after that chapter. It gave me a real guide as to who I was looking for. You embrace your genius even if others don't. Authenticity over popularity. So I was looking for a weirdo in the room who was prepared to be authentic. And so it gave me a guide, really, the chapters that I'd written as to who I was looking for. And do you know what? When you ask for something, I think it's your best manifesting tool, then that's what's going to come to you. And that's what happened. The right women came. Some of them were last minute, but they came and they were saying, look, I want to share, this is me, and I want to share my story.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, it's kind of interesting though, because every guest I've had on my show, just about, I'd almost have to say 90% of my guests are women. And I
Really?
think that's because they're not afraid to share their story, where men are
Mm-hmm.
more
More
secluded and
reserved.
they don't want the world to know.
And I'd love to do another Beyond the Ordinary with the stories of men and boys in, because I have a boy, a man here, a young man who is also autistic. And my daughter's written a chapter, and I'd love him to do that. So I've been
Love to be.
connected with, I've been connected with some male autistic people now that would be good for another book.
I'd love to be in it, and I know another person who would probably jump for a chance to be in it.
So it was kind of a movement I was starting when I wrote Beyond the Ordinary. It was a movement I wanted to create of, let's bring these voices, let's have them heard, let's get it out there. And I've paid a lot of money for PR to get this book. I've got a couple of celebrities going to read the book for me, so I'm hoping that it has a big impact as we move down the line. So let's
Now,
see.
out of the 100, how did you decide on 30?
I think do you know there's a natural filter in life. Some of them thought it was a good idea, then realized they had to write 2,000 words and dropped off. So there's a natural drop off of 30%. And then some of them realized there was a deadline and didn't think they could work to a deadline. So there's kind of a number of filters along the way. Even one of the authors dropped out literally two days before the deadline of me needing the chapters in, and I had to find a replacement because we'd done all of the graphics saying that the stories of 30 women, and I couldn't then have 29. So I had some reserves that were like, I don't know whether it's the right time. And I was able to then talk to that to a couple of them and say, look, there's a space now, do it now. So there's a natural filter that happens because people always think it's a great idea until they realize it's work.
Yeah. People don't realize writing a book is hard. I mean, it took me 3 years to get my book out.
Yeah.
And now it's in the hands of my editor, so
I can't wait to read it.
I'll send you a cop I'll send you a free copy.
Brilliant.
Or
Well, I'll send you one of these. If you'll have to give me your address and I'll send you one of ours.
I can send you the unedited copy and you can write a testimonial.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Yeah.
Great, I'll send it to you. Now, what do you want people to pick up from your book?
I think more than anything is, acceptance and stop judging people based on the external that you see, because there's so much more going on. Everybody's got a story. You never know what the person standing next to you is going through. And I think we could be more empathic and more non-judgmental as human beings, really. That's what I want the book to bring. That's the conversations I want to have.
Right. What was it like to see so many women interested in sharing their stories in your book?
Oh, it was so empowering for me to see that there was the interest there. And believe me, since the book has been published, there's lots more saying, if you do another book, I'd love to share my story. So I think this has some longevity.
Now, what advice do you have for those listening and for those who are reading your book?
I think when you're reading the book, you're going to feel emotional. You're also going to feel a little bit inspired and be inspired and know that you can do anything. For those that are listening that are thinking that they'd love to tell their story, but they don't know where to start, pick up a pen and paper and just start writing.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and what you do and find a copy of your book?
Well, they can find me and everything I do on mandynicholson.co.uk. And that'll lead them everywhere. The book is available on Amazon. Beyond the Ordinary, Discover the Power of Creative and Neurodiverse Women. And you can buy it on paperback, hardback, and Kindle.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Mandy Nicholson. I'll see you in the next one. Thank you, Mandy.
Thank you. Take